fun for me to be here in a presentation that has politics in the main title of the panel, because I've actually been spending the past 10 years of my career, I'm a public health lawyer, I have a kind of a weird combination of law and public health, which when I got those two degrees, I didn't even know there was a field. As it turns out, there now is an emerging field called public health law that looks at how we can use legal tools and strategies to improve the public's health. And but for the first 10 years since getting those degrees, I've actually been working in the field of food policy and really taking a hard look at the food industry and how it influences our food choices and, of course, all the politics associated with that. And I just started kind of, I don't like to say switching hats, but maybe adding a hat by looking at the alcohol industry. And I've been working with the Marin Institute doing that since January. And I like to say it's been a pretty easy transition. You know, pretty much the tactics are the same. It's the same talking points. It doesn't really matter what the industry is. The strategies are very similar. So I want to just go through some of those tactics with you. But first I want to tell you, are you doing that? Or am I doing that? Okay, I'll do it. So if you're not familiar with the Marin Institute, we've been around for about 20 years. And in the last couple of years, we've really focused our mission on the alcohol industry. And so what we do is expose the industry's harmful promotions, practices, and products, and we research viable policy strategies, and we support community actions and coalitions to counter industry behavior, and then we look at the proper framing of the issues. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of thinking about the role of the alcohol industry in all this. You know, as important as a lot of the local strategies are, you know, we can't just deal with sort of the local pushers or dealers, if you will. We have to kind of deal with the drug cartel, right? Otherwise, we're really not going to do anything about where these products are coming from. So just to go over with you some of the corporate tactics kind of on a big picture level that really are similar across issues. So the first one is the consolidation of individual companies into these massive transnational firms. And I can't emphasize enough that, you know, when we're thinking about alcohol companies, you can't just think about, you know, Miller Brewing Company in Milwaukee. I mean, those days are long gone. These companies have consolidated, they are global in scope, and they operate that way. And, of course, the key to their success is to continue the train of consumers by getting kids hooked, right? Tobacco industry wrote the book on this, alcohol industry, it's the same thing. The data is there. Of course, we know the younger kids start drinking, the more likely they are to become, to have alcohol problems later in life. And so the alcohol industry knows this as well. On a PR level, the name of the game here, of course, is at all costs to deflect any attention away from responsibility of industry itself and put the blame back on either the individual, if it's an adult, or when we're talking about youth, it's all up to the parents, right? How often do we hear that? How many campaigns have you seen aimed at parents? We just need to talk to our kids. We just need to educate our kids. We just need to pass laws that blame parents for holding the parties. And I'm not saying that that's a bad idea, but I think we need to look beyond just holding parents responsible. The other common tactic is the formation of major powerful lobbying and front groups. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. And then, of course, what these groups do is lobby to undermine policy making. And there's so much of that that's going on that needs greater attention and exposing. Finally, I'll just touch on the use of philanthropy as a major PR tool is critical to this discussion and debate. You know, it's not just you know, by happenstance that you see companies like Anheuser-Busch giving money to local communities for an underage drinking program. Or we see industry partnering now with government on we don't serve teens, this sort of nonsense. Okay, this is a great way for industry to look good, right? Hey, look what we're doing over here. We're the good guys. We're giving money to communities. We care about underage drinking. But don't look over here because we've got all this advertising going on that's trying to get those kids hooked in the first place. Okay, so please do not fall for the philanthropy trick because it's across the board. Philip Morris wrote the book on that too. So let's talk, who are we talking about? It's critical that you understand who these companies are. So at the top level, the major beer companies are, Anheuser-Busch, right, owns about half of the beer that's sold in this country. I was going to tell you that then we had the second and third largest beer producers after that, but just a couple of weeks ago, these two beer companies announced they were actually merging. So it's hard to keep up. So Miller Beer, I mentioned, is actually owned by a South African company called South African Brewing. So this company has announced that the U.S. and Puerto Rican components of their operations will be merging with Molson Coors. Okay, now this is, I know it gets confusing because Molson Coors emerged before. So, right, so, I mean, it must be very difficult for these companies to not have enough room on their letterhead as they merge together and they have to, you know, put all their names together. So we will have a new company. We're not sure yet if it's, you know, what it's going to be called, maybe Miller Molson Coors. I think it's going to be Miller Coors. But the point is that this is the name of the game to consolidate, and what these companies are doing, of course, in the case of Miller and Coors is creating a much better competitor, right? Because Anheuser-Busch is the real big gun here. They're trying to compete with Anheuser-Busch. And then it's not just beer, of course, that we're concerned about. On the spirit side, and these two companies, Diageo and Pernod Ricard, are the largest spirits conglomerates, but they also own, this is critical, it's no longer the case that we have separate beer, wine, and spirits producers. Diageo and Pernod Ricard actually own across all three categories, and increasingly, even the beer companies are starting to get into the other areas as well. So we can't even talk about beer companies, wine companies, it's all merging. Anheuser-Busch, I just threw some of their unbelievably large portfolio of products, as they say in industry, to give you an idea of the range of products that they make. And their annual sales are close to $18 billion. That's just the number that's kind of mind-boggling. We have our friend here, Augie Bush IV. It's still all in the family. And his compensation tops a whopping $9 billion. Okay, so to put that in perspective, I wish I could give you the data on what the, you know, sort of factory workers in the beer make, but, you know, you can kind of conjure that image up for yourself. Some of these products are probably familiar to you. I think it's important to understand that the company has been buying up products like Rolling Rock that you might have had this idea was still independent. Well, it's not. And it's also been getting into the Alka-Pop category with the Bacardi Silver Raz. The 180 drink is actually non-alcoholic energy drink, so they're getting into that. And, of course, O'Doul's is non-alcoholic. I put the image of the train up here because they actually own all kinds of other operations. So, you know, it's sort of this vertical integration approach, right? If you're going to have to ship products all over the country, why not own the vehicles that they get shipped in? And so they do own a railroad company, and they own all kinds of canning companies, you know, the bottles. I mean, they get into all of it, of course, to make it much cheaper for them to operate. Molson Coors, I mentioned, is going to be merging with Miller Brewing. Currently, their annual sales are also almost $8 billion and own a number, again, Blue Moon, you know, if you think that's independent, sorry, it's not. And their CEO makes less, oh, poor guy, under $5 billion. Million, sorry. So SAB Miller also, you know, this company owns an unbelievable number of different beer. And what's interesting, I really encourage you to go, particularly on the SAB Miller website, and look at their products by country. It will just blow me away when you see how many products are they make in different countries. And most of them are products that you've never heard of. This is just to give you the scope of how these companies operate. Diageo is a really important company to know about because, again, this is the massive spirits company and is extremely influential in lobbying. And they own Guinness beer, which a lot of people don't realize. And of course, they own the Smirnoff line of vodkas, but they also own across other types of spirits as well. And the reason they're most important when it comes to underage drinking is because of the Smirnoff Ice category of beverages, which is the Alka-Pop product, right? So they've taken the Smirnoff brand, which is vodka, and they've created a spin-off product they call Smirnoff Ice, and now there are many different flavors of Smirnoff Ice, and they've loaded it up with sugar, or, you know, whatever version of sugar they're using. We don't know, because government refuses to label the products with ingredients. That's a whole other problem. So Smirnoff Ice is a product that's owned by Diageo. It's important to know who owns these products. Diageo happens to be based in the UK. So, and that's typical too. A lot of these countries aren't even based in the US companies. So Pernod Ricard is based in France, and they own, again, products across the spectrum, spirits and wine, and a number of familiar brand names that you may not have known, or all under one family of products. So I want to talk about the lobbying. These companies, spend their money wisely, right? They spend a lot of money in two ways. We kind of understand what campaign contributions are, but I think what gets ignored is the massive amount of money that industry spends lobbying. What does that mean? Well, they're sending people out to talk to the legislators, to kill bills, to put up bills like the one in Massachusetts, etc. And this is an incredibly effective way that they do their business. So just some federal numbers, over $15 million in total spent in 2006, $3 million of that just by Diageo, and then federal campaign contributions topped $10 million in 2006. And we're doing a study looking at just at California. California alone campaign contributions topped $3 million in 2006. And then it's really important to know who the major players are in the trade association. So we have the manufacturer trade groups, the Beer Institute, DISCUS, which is the Distilled Spirits Council of the U.S., and the Wine Institute, also major lobbying players. But just as important, that's at the manufacturing level. But go down from there, and the wholesalers, they are incredibly powerful. The National Beer Wholesalers Association donated over $3 million in the 2006 election campaign. Similarly, the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers donated over $1 million. Incredibly powerful players. I want to spend a minute talking about front groups. Okay, it's kind of you can kind of get your head around the idea of a trade group, right? It's companies coming together, pooling their dollars, lobbying. But a front group is also really important to understand. So this is a group that it kind of sounds like it's a good guy, you know, but they're really basically funded by the industry, and they're deliberately obscuring what their true motivation is. And so the number one top list of front groups is the Century Council, right? They make themselves out to be so good. Oh, they care about underage drinking. They're also up there partnering with the FTC and doing all this great stuff. Well, the Century Council is completely 100% funded by members of the alcohol industry. And the name of the game is to get you to not pay attention to what their members are doing, but rather to think that they really care and to keep your attention focused on their ineffective educational programs. Similarly, the Center for Consumer Freedom and their sister group, the American Beverage Institute, is out there really in charge of PR for industry. They're out there calling Marin Institute neo-prohibitionists and so forth, really trying to control the debate and dialogue in the media. Similarly, the International Center for Alcohol Policies, well, they, you know, sounds good, right? Well, who could be against that? They sound like they could even be an arm of government. Well, they do research, but, again, fully funded by the alcohol industry to obscure the fact of what's really going on. A couple of websites I found from these other websites, which to be aware of. So Girl Talk is something just really silly about how girls are supposed to get aware of alcohol issues. Alcohol 101 is, I think, a high school program, and this other one, I'm not sure what it's supposed to be, but don't pay attention to it. So what can we do about this, right? Okay, this is a pretty grim picture of this massive industry. It feels so overwhelming. How do we take them on? Well, the number one thing is to not work with them. Okay? Because we cannot oppose them if we're partnering with them. Okay? I mean, it should be pretty obvious that these are not people that we can actually sit down and accomplish anything with. So I cannot stress enough that if you are taking money, if your group is considering taking money from the alcohol industry, you will be compromising any position that you want to take from there on out. So do not do that. Next, we have to really work with the media to expose all of the PR, anything that the alcohol industry is doing to undermine our efforts, the lobbying, their marketing practices, etc. Next, I really want to stress that I know a lot of the government funding in this area is to work locally. And there are a lot of important efforts to do that. And I don't want to say that we should stop doing that. And I want to say that we also need to look to state-level policymaking, because states have a lot of power when it comes to this issue, more so than other consumer goods. So state-level policymaking is critical. Not so easy, I know. And even harder is the federal government. But we have to be looking at state-level and federal policymaking if we're really going to get anywhere. And that means working on policies that hurt industry the most, to get at what's really going on here. The marketing, that's where they're the most vulnerable. Obviously, they're not spending $6 billion for no reason. It's because they know that's what works. Tax increases, this is another area that we've been working on at the Marin Institute. We were able to get the state of California to reclassify alcopops as distilled spirits, which will significantly increase the taxes, which we know will have an impact on underage drinking. You must go after the flavored malt beverages. They are being misclassified in half the states in this country as beer. That's a lot of revenue that your state is not getting, and a lot of youth who are picking up these products because they're so cheap. Next, I want you to encourage you to join the fight against big alcohol by signing up on our mailing list. We have resources for how to take on big alcohol. We're always looking for partners, so there's our information. And I want to put a plug in also for a shameless promotion. I've written a book about the food industry. There are a lot of similarities. We need to also stop working on these issues one by one. We need to think about how to look at the similarities among tobacco, alcohol, and food. So if you're interested in my book, there's the website, and I have postcards, and I look forward to the discussion. Thank you very much.